You're listening to a Peak Media production.
And now, coming to you from the Windy City, it's The Daily Dime with your host, Tim Keller.
Welcome, everyone, to this Wednesday edition of The Daily Dime. Today is May 14th, and the Cavs season is officially over. So a rough morning as a Cleveland fan here, as they lose 114-105 at home in Game 5 against the Pacers. So they win the series 4-1. And I can't believe they actually lost again in the second round. This is a team that won 64 games in the regular season. They had multiple win streaks of 15 games. And here we are with another second round exit to what feels like a much less talented team in the Pacers. No disrespect to them, but they had me fooled again. Like, they looked really good to start the game last night. They were up 31-19 at the end of the first quarter. They led by 19 at one point. And then heading into halftime, like, the tide of the game had completely shifted. And Indiana was just, they were more physical. And they just seemed to make everything very, very difficult for the Cavs, and especially the guards. Like, it was hard to inbound it. It was hard to get the ball up the floor. It was hard to get into any of their sets. It was hard to penetrate. I mean, it was just, everything looked difficult for the guards, and it felt like every possession, like, they couldn't even get the ball across half court till like 17 or 18 seconds on the shot clock already, like borderline 8-second violations every single time. And then there was just so much standing around. Like, they didn't have a lot of time to get into any sets. And then there was barely any ball movement, it felt like. And that's like one of the first concepts that they teach you, you know, when you start to play like any competitive basketball. Like, you want to get the ball moving. You want to get it reversed because it gets the defense moving. And not only does it like wear them down and tire them out a bit, but that's what leads to opportunities offensively and lapses on the defense. It's how you get your cutting lanes. It's how you can slash and get to the hoop and, you know, whatever, score or kick it out. Just simple basketball concepts, and just none of that was happening. It just felt like everything was stagnant, and it showed. I mean, they got outscored 66-45 in the second and third quarters, and it was apparent on the broadcast too. Like, every few minutes it felt like there was another ticker, like, hey, the Cavs haven't scored in five, or haven't scored a field goal at least in 5 minutes, or they don't have a field goal in the last 7 minutes. Just huge stretches that cannot happen, especially in the postseason. And it was just extremely frustrating to watch as a Cavs fan. And it was apparent in the box score too. Like, Max Strus, who, I love his mentality. He came in and allegedly texted everybody that morning or the night before, whatever it was, and said, hey, like, if you don't believe, don't show up today. And then he ends up shooting 0-for-9 from the field. He was 0-for-6 from three. Basically didn't show up. He had 0 points in 26 minutes. And again, love him, love the mentality, but just cannot have that in an elimination game. And then Darius Garland had a really rough night. He was just 4-for-16 from the field. He had 5 turnovers, was just a sieve defensively. And I know he's banged up. I know Mitchell's banged up. A lot of these guys are dealing with some sort of lingering injury, but it just, I mean, if you're going to be out there, it just cannot be that bad. And Garland was also 0-for-6 from three. And then Mitchell, he had 35 points, but a lot of it came from the free throw line. He was only 8-for-25 from the field. And that's just not going to cut it in these tight games. So yeah, Cavs season comes to an end. But you got to give credit to the Pacers. I mean, they all series long, they hit the shots that they needed. They were the more physical team, felt like they just wanted it more. And you look at even like the Cavs bigs, like, I thought Mobley played pretty well yesterday. He had 24 points. He was really efficient offensively. He had 11 boards and he had 2 blocks and a bunch of possessions where I thought he actually played really well on the defensive end, where he was altering shots and making it pretty difficult for some of the Pacers players in the paint. But if you're Jarrett Allen, like, you played 30 minutes, you only had 4 rebounds, no blocks. It felt like he was a liability defensively also. And you just can't have that. And the Pacers were just the complete opposite. So again, got to give them credit. Halliburton played really well again. He's had a weird series where I feel like he's been completely irrelevant for really long stretches. And then, but every time they've needed a big shot, he's been there. And so he was really efficient yesterday, 10 for 15 from the field. He had 31 points, 6 for 10 from three. He also had 8 assists and a block and a steal. So kind of filling up the stat sheet there as well. And then the rest of the starters were in double figures, and it's kind of all they needed. I mean, they played really well defensively. Again, like I said, they just made everything seemingly impossible for the Cavs. And they're really hot right now. They move the ball well on offense. And I think the most telling stat from yesterday, besides like the obvious shooting percentages, was the assist totals. The Pacers had 26 assists. The Cavs only had 10. Like, this is statistically, not just like my opinion, this is statistically the second best offense of all time, the Cavs were this season. And you only have 10 assists in a playoff game. Like, it's just so obvious that the ball was not moving and everything was stagnant. But I give credit to the Pacers for that. So congrats to Indy. They'll move on and play the winner of the Celtics and the Knicks, and who will play game 5 tonight. We'll talk about more of that, or talk more about that in a second. But I want to talk a little bit about the second game we had last night, which was game 5 between the Nuggets and the Thunder in Oklahoma City. The Thunder would win this one 112-105 to take a 3-2 series lead. And this one kind of reminded me like game 4, where Denver seemed to be in control of this one for large portions of the game. And they were up 12 halfway through the third, and they were up late as well. But then OKC came storming back just like they did in game 4. And it was still tight down the stretch, though. Like, it was 103-100 with the Thunder leading. And then Jokic hit one of those insane, like, just chuck them up there threes that it feels like he has murdered the Lakers with the past couple years. And I saw a bunch of tweets from like Thunder fans who were just saying like, oh, we get it now. Like, I can't believe that just went in. But luckily for the Thunder, they still won the game. So even though Jokic tied it at 103 there with just a couple minutes left, OKC then hit back-to-back threes to go up 6. And that was pretty much enough. That got it to 109-103. And that was basically the game. So I will say, though, Jokic was insane yesterday. It was one of the better games you'll ever see in the playoffs, just from an efficiency standpoint, the effect that he had on the game. Like, just his stat line is nuts. He had 44 points on 17 for 25 shooting. He was 5 for 7 from 3, 5 for 5 from the free throw line. He had 15 rebounds, 6 of them were offensive, 5 assists, 2 steals, and he only had 2 turnovers in 44 minutes. And with his usage rate, like, that's just incredible. So, I mean, insane game from him. Have to give him all the credit in the world. I think he's the best player in the world right now. But other than that, they just didn't get a lot of help from anyone else. Aaron Gordon was okay. I mean, he was 6 for 13. He had 13 points, but he was 1 for 5 from 3. Michael Porter Jr. was just 1 for 7. He was 0 for 5 from 3. And no one else was really super efficient. You get 28 points from Jamal Murray, but it took him 27 shots to get there. So hard to complain about 28 points, but when you're missing, I mean, when you miss 17 shots from the field, it's just not going to be a great night overall. And then their bench really struggled. They were just 3 for 13 from the field. And when you look at the team as a whole, they really just struggled from 3. And that's kind of been the difference in seemingly every single game, no matter the series and this entire playoffs. But they only shot 28% as a team, and that was with Jokic going 5 for 7. So if you don't count him, they were only 8 for 39 from 3, and you're just not going to win many games like that. It's crazy that it was even as close as it was down the stretch. But then on the Thunder side, SGA had another really solid game. Like, I typically get on him about his efficiency, but he shot over 50% again from the field, 100% from the free throw line, had 31 points, 6 rebounds, 7 assists. Really, really solid game from him. And then they had 5 other players in double figures. And it's kind of been their MO all year. Like, they're a really deep team. Obviously, I mean, they won 68 games. It doesn't happen by accident. And so not any huge surprises here. I thought Denver might be able to steal one on the road, but OKC got the job done, took care of business. Now they're up 3-2 as the series heads back to Denver. And I still like Denver in game 6, though. I think they're still a fantastic team. I would not be surprised at all if they're able to push this to 7. I think the Thunder probably win in 7. But hopefully we get 2 more great games, because this has been another really great series. Denver's been in dogfights every single game in the playoffs. And hopefully we get 2 more. So those were both games from last night. We'll have two more games tonight, starting with the Knicks and the Celtics in the TD Garden, which will be game five with the Knicks leading that series 3-1. Obviously, the Celtics won't have Tatum, who it was confirmed he tore his Achilles and actually already had surgery. Sounds like it went well, so hopefully he has a solid recovery there. The Celtics are actually favored tonight, even without Tatum, but I think the Knicks end up closing it out, even on the road. And even if they don't, I don't see the Celtics coming back and winning three straight games without Tatum. So I think we'll probably get the Knicks advancing. And if you're the Celtics, you just have to wonder, like, what does the future of this team look like? Because you're probably, like, just thinking by the time that Tatum comes back, so assuming he misses all of next year, like, I would guess there's a chance that he maybe could come back, like, deep into the postseason, but I would assume that doesn't happen. So you're going to miss all next year if you're Tatum, most likely. And then by the time he comes back, like, Horford's probably not going to be there. I don't know if, like, Porzingis will be there. The team is already really expensive. It's just, I don't even know what they're going to look like. And it's just, it's crazy how fast your fortunes can turn in the NBA. Like, this team, you're coming off a championship. You win 60 games again. You're probably the favorites to come out of the East again. And now here you are, like, most likely going to lose to the Knicks in the second round. And who knows what your outlook is for the next couple years now. So we'll see how they're able to rebuild. It seems like the Celtics are always able to find a way to, like, manipulate something or get a crazy trade. So who knows? Maybe they'll, like, end up with Giannis or something insane. But no, that would be, I don't even think that's feasible financially. But who knows? Maybe they'll find a way to wiggle themselves out of this problem too. But does not look great for them. And then anyway, following that game tonight, we'll have Warriors Timberwolves game five in that series. Sounds like Steph is not going to play tonight. I know this was the first game that they said he might be able to come back for, but it doesn't seem like he's ready. So Minnesota, they're big favorites by, like, double digits, and I think they probably close it out tonight at home. But we'll see. Maybe Jimmy and Buddy Hield can put the team on their backs and make it interesting, force a game six back in California, but I think it's highly unlikely. So we'll talk about those games more tomorrow once we have those results. We did have one game in the NHL last night. It was game four between the Stars and the Jets in Dallas, and the Stars won this one 3-1 thanks to another hat trick and a three-goal game from Granlund. It just seems like that's been every game for Dallas in this series so far. The other ones were Rantanen, who only had 1 point yesterday, but hard to complain about that as they get another win to take a 3-1 series lead before they head back to Winnipeg for game five. And then tonight we'll have two games, the first being the Panthers and the Maple Leafs in Toronto with that series tied 2-2. And then following that, we will have the Oilers and the Golden Knights in Vegas. That will also be game five, but Edmonton is leading that one 3-1. I also want to talk about some of the MLB scores last night because we had five walk-offs, which is just insane. So starting off, we had the Tigers and the Red Sox in Detroit, and we ended up with seven runs in extra innings, but three of them came from Javi Baez on a walk-off home run in the bottom of the 11th to give the Tigers a 10-9 win. And it's his resurgence has been crazy this year. Like, he really struggled, especially last year, but has, like, basically completely turned it around, and he's been a big part of why the Tigers are 28-15 right now. And then the Cubs actually walked it off right here in Chicago. They were down 4-2 heading into the ninth, but then they got three in the bottom half of the inning, including a walk-off double from Justin Turner to win 5-4 over the Marlins. And then Paredes hit a walk-off home run for the Astros to give them a 2-1 win over the Royals in Houston. And then Fernando Tatis Jr. hit a two-run walk-off bomb to give the Padres a 6-4 win over the Angels. And then finally, the Mariners walked it off against the Yankees 2-1 thanks to a single from Crawford. So some craziness out of the MLB last night. And then we also had some news yesterday where the commissioner, Rob Manfred, decided to rescind the bans from, like, Pete Rose, Shoeless Joe Jackson, a couple other players who have since passed away, and which now makes them eligible for the Hall of Fame, which I think a lot of these guys should have been in the Hall of Fame already, like, especially Pete Rose. Like, he bet on himself, which is what all of us metaphorically do every single day. But anyway, bet on himself, should have been in the Hall of Fame, the all-time hit king. You know, we could talk about this at length. Maybe we will another day. But he should have been in. And then same with Shoeless Joe Jackson. You know, they talk about the White Sox, or the Black Sox scandal, throwing the World Series like, you know, over 100 years ago. And it just doesn't seem like he actually had anything to do with that, with his performance. You know, like, he led both teams in a ton of categories and was fantastic throughout that series. And I don't think he should have been banned either. So I'd put both of them in. I'd also put all the steroid era guys in. But again, I think that's a conversation for another day. But so I guess it was kind of good news yesterday from that. I wish this would have happened sooner, especially while Pete Rose was alive still. But at least they got to that point. So I think they'll probably end up in the Hall, but it's still up to the writers. We'll see if they end up inducting them or not. So anyway, that'll just about wrap it up for this Wednesday episode of The Daily Dime. As always, thank you for listening. And if you would, please consider following the show and rating 5 stars on Apple, Spotify, or wherever else you may listen. We'll talk to you tomorrow. See ya.